For 13 years, Lee Strobel was the award-winning legal editor of the Chicago Tribune and an outspoken atheist. His wife's conversion sent him on a 2-year investigation to prove Christianity was false. Two major questions confronted him. Did Jesus really claim to be the Son of God? And did Jesus really rise from the dead? Today, you'll hear what he discovered. Lee has written 3 best-selling books documenting the evidence that persuaded him to become a Christian: The Case for Christ, The Case for Faith, and The Case for the Creator. Join us for this special edition of The John Ankerberg Show. Welcome to our program. We've got a great one for you today. My guest is Lee Strobel. He's the former legal editor of the Chicago Tribune. He was there for 13 years, won many awards. Unfortunately, all that time, he was an atheist. And somewhere along the line, circumstances brought him to examine the evidence for the historic Jesus. And was Jesus who he claimed to be? And did he give proof by rising from the dead? The evidence brought him to become a Christian. And he put that evidence into a best-selling book called The Case for Christ, which sold over 2 million copies worldwide. He's also written The Case for Faith, The Case for the Creator. And he's got a new one coming out, The Case for the Real Jesus. Now, what we want to get to today is there are new attacks on the resurrection facts. And there are scholars today in both the media as well as in modern scholarship that have tried to take the facts, the minimal facts that we were looking at last week, and said, we've got a better explanation than that Jesus actually rose from the dead. And we want to look at some of those and examine them in light of the 5 facts, and we'll go both sides today. So Lee, let's start off. One of the things that's very interesting is probably 1,500,000,000 people hold to this view. Can they all be wrong? And we're talking about the Quran versus the Bible. Explain what you're talking about.
Well, certainly, John, the Islamic belief is that Jesus did not die on the cross. And I can back that up for you and just show you how clear in which this is articulated in the Quran. I'll read it to you. Right. This is from Surah 4, verses 157 and 158. That they said in boast, we killed Christ Jesus, the son of Mary, the messenger of Allah, but they did not kill him nor crucified him. But so it was made to appear to them. And those who differ therein are full of doubts, with no certain knowledge, but only conjecture to follow. For of a surety they did not kill him. Nay, Allah had raised him up unto himself, and Allah is exalted in power, wise. So either, according to the Islamic belief, either Allah made it appear that Jesus died when he really didn't, and then he healed them afterwards, or he substituted someone for Jesus, and people thought it was Jesus who was being killed, but it really wasn't. And as you say, this is certainly the teaching in Islam, and it's defended more and more vociferously by Muslims who are debating Christians on this topic. They know, just like I know as a Christian, the ball game is the resurrection.
Right.
And if you can somehow undermine that, then you've undermined the entire faith.
Now, how do those 5 facts refute their objection?
Well, I have a good friend who's a Muslim. He's a well-known Muslim, probably one of the most famous in America. If I told you his name, you'd know it. And he comes over to my house, and we debate these things. We grill steaks, and we're talking. I said, let me just tell you why I'm not a Muslim. He said, yeah, I'd be interested. Okay, let me tell you why. He said, I've got, on my side in terms of the resurrection of Jesus, I've got these 5 facts that virtually every scholar in the world, even skeptics, will agree to: that Jesus was executed, that the disciples believe that they encountered him after he was resurrected, the conversion of Saul of Tarsus into Paul, the great apostle, the conversion of James, the skeptic, half-brother of Jesus, to become a leader of the early church who died for his faith, and the empty tomb, which is 75% of all critical scholars will accept as being historically true. And I got this evidence goes right back to the first century itself. I've got writings in the first century. I've got a creed of the early church. It goes right back to the scene itself. Now, on the other hand, I read the Quran, and I read in Surah 4, verses 157 and 158, that it isn't true. Now, I'm told that in a cave, 600 years later, Muhammad is greeted by an angel who tells him Jesus wasn't really crucified. And then that becomes what Muslims believe today. Now, I said, just weigh the two. Just purely on an historical basis, which one makes more sense. And I think the evidence, John, the historical evidence is so strong when it supports the resurrection of Jesus compared to, you know, frankly, someone being told in a cave 600 years later that isn't true. I think there's a reason why there's virtually no scholar in the world, when they investigate the historical Jesus, uses the Quran as a source. So I just think the evidence is on the side of believing that Jesus did indeed return from the dead.
You also have an Islamic catch-22. What does that mean?
Yeah, Michael Lacona, who's an expert on the resurrection, actually brought this up to me, and I think it's a very good point. He said the Quran creates a catch-22, and here's what it is. According to the Quran, Jesus is a great prophet. Now, historically speaking, we have excellent, excellent evidence that Jesus predicted his imminent and violent demise. Now, if Jesus predicted his imminent and violent demise and it never happened, well, that would be consistent with what the Quran said, but it would contradict the Quran, because then he wouldn't be a great prophet. He would have been false in his prediction of the future. If Jesus did predict his violent and imminent death and he did indeed die on the cross, well, it proves that he's the Son of God, and it contradicts the Quran, because the Quran says he didn't die on the cross, and by the way, he's not the Son of God. So either way, it's sort of heads I win, tails you lose. I think that, you know, the Quran has got a problem in this particular area.
And even the explanation that's in the Quran portion that you just read to us says that it's possible that Allah made him to appear.
Right.
Okay, but that's deceitful as well.
Exactly. If that were true, then Allah is and Jesus are deceiving people. And now it's one thing to say, I'm going to deceive my persecutors who are trying to kill me, but they'd be deceiving the disciples. If Allah knew that a false religion of Christianity would spring up because of this mistaken belief that Jesus had been put to death, you'd think he would have set it straight rather than letting the deceit create a false religion. So I just think there's too many logical problems with the explanation, and certainly I think the fatal flaw is the fact that we've got so much historical data on the other side, and really 600 years later, I mean, it's not possible to have, you know, reliable historical data concerning Jesus as persuasive as it is from right there in the first
century.
Yeah,
I mean, let's say America's 250 years old approximately, and the fact is if you had something happen in George Washington's day and now somebody 250 years later talked about it, you'd say, well, listen, should we talk to the guys that were right there with Washington or 250 years later? Well, let's make that 600 years later.
Yeah.
Three times the length of America is what you're saying. Are we going to trust this source or the guys that were right on the scene that we have multiple attestation for?
Exactly. And often when I talk to Muslims about this, their response is to simply say, I choose to believe the prophet. Well, that's their right. They can choose to believe the prophet, and that they have every right to be able to do that. However, I would say that sidesteps the issue. The issue to me is, where does the evidence point? Where does the evidence of history point? Where does the evidence of logic and reason point? And I want to invest my life in a faith that is not contrary to the evidence, but a faith that is a step we take in the same direction that the evidence points. That is logical to do. That is rational to do. We do that every day of our life. We take a step of faith in the same direction the evidence points. And I think when we do that in terms of the historical evidence for the resurrection of Jesus, we take a step of faith to receive then Jesus as our forgiver and
Lord.
Yeah,
former Muslims Emir and Ergun Kanner, they've been on the program. And the thing that got them as Muslims was, they wrote a book on the title, Was Jesus More Than a Prophet? Mm. And they were asked the question, well, you believe that Jesus was put on trial and he was supposed to die. Yeah. Well, what was the charge? Mm. Well, it was blasphemy, because he said, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? He said, I am. Well, was he telling the truth? I mean, forget the resurrection for a moment. Was he telling the truth there? If he was, then he is the Son of God. He is the Messiah. He is the Son of the Holy One there. The Son of Man, all of those titles are wrapped up right there. And the fact is, you can't just, because the Quran says he's an honored prophet of Allah.
Yeah, it says specifically, God does not have a son.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, that's another problem there historically, because we have very good evidence right there in the very first biography of Jesus about that exchange between Caiaphas the high priest and Jesus.
All right, now we got another one. Let's switch hats here, and let's go to some of the stuff that's been in the popular media. It's been on Dateline. They've done special programs on Michael Bajan's book, The Jesus Papers. Okay, what's the theory that he is saying that refutes the resurrection?
Yeah. John, this is bizarre stuff. His claim is that when Jesus was being crucified, Pilate didn't want him to really die because Jesus was encouraging people to pay their taxes, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give God what's God's. So Pilate liked him for that. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't really want to kill him. So he crucified him, but then he gave him some aloe and myrrh on the cross, and that somehow healed him. You know, he was able to, you know, pretend he was dead, and then he's healed by these medications that he was given. And so the whole idea is he was not resurrected, he was merely resuscitated. Now, this is so full of holes, it's so bizarre, that number one, I was talking to one expert on the resurrection, he said, look, if these, you know, aloe can accomplish this, if it can heal a man who's been scourged, beaten to a pulp in hypovolemic shock, who's been had nails driven through his hands and feet, who's had a spear driven through his side, if these simple herbs can cure somebody, why aren't we using them in every hospital in the world?
It'd be the
these
wonder drugs.
The miracle drugs. Are you kidding me? This is great stuff. So it's just an absurd idea that, and plus the fact that Paul encouraged people to follow the law and thus pay their taxes, didn't stop them from killing Paul. So this idea that somehow, well, Pilate wouldn't kill him because he was saying people should pay their taxes doesn't hold up anyway. It's just, it makes me so mad, John, that you have people like Bajan, who's what, his master's degree is in mysticism, mm-hmm. who's they write things that are so historically ridiculous, and yet they're getting published by major publishers, and people think, hey, it's in print, it must be true, and this is stuff that there is no serious historian on planet Earth who would subscribe to such an absurd theory.
All right, take a third one, and that's Richard Carrier, the atheist, and he psychoanalyzes Paul. Why is that supposed to be a refutation of the resurrection? What does Carrier say?
Yeah, Carrier says that Paul, and he goes in this big psychoanalysis thing, and by the way, I know Richard Carrier, I like him, I've talked to him, and he's a good guy, but I think he's just terribly wrong here. To try to psychoanalyze somebody 2,000 years later and say that somehow Paul felt guilty because he was killing these Christians and persecuting the Christians. And by the way, he wasn't so happy where he was in his status as a Pharisee. He could be a leader of the church. He could be someone who really had status. And so he somehow has these psychological reasons for imagining this experience with Jesus in which he is converted on the road to Damascus. I mean, now, with all due respect, this is just wacky. Because first of all, Paul tells us why he became a follower of Jesus. That is, he encountered the resurrected Christ. And by the way, it wasn't just something in his mind. The people with him saw the light. They heard the speaking. They didn't understand it. But it wasn't just a subjective experience. It was an objective thing that happened to him that others knew something was happening. So this wasn't something just in his head. Plus, we have multiple historical accounts verifying that Paul was willing to live a life of deprivation, continual suffering and persecution because of his conviction that Jesus is the Son of God who proved it by returning from the dead. And by the way, I talked to him. I know it's true. So he tells us why he was converted. We don't have to psychoanalyze him 2,000 years later, which is kind of crazy when you think about it anyway. So I think that it's just a grasping at straws. It does not account for the evidence. Plus, if it were true, what about the empty tomb?
Yeah.
Where's the body?
What about the other disciples?
What about James?
Yeah.
James, a half-brother of Jesus, who was a skeptic during the life of Jesus, becomes a leader of the local church because of the resurrected Christ. He was another one who had no reason, no psychological reason to somehow put his faith in his brother, and then why? So he could knowingly and willingly die for a lie? John, I look through history. I don't find a whole lot of examples of people who knowingly and willingly were willing to die for what they knew was a lie.
All right, so the resurrection is still standing, and we're going to continue this in a moment. We're going to look at the objection that it wasn't a physical, literal physical bodily resurrection. It was a spiritual resurrection. It was kind of an experiential deal. Marcus Borg and some of the others in the Jesus Seminar have floated this. We'll look at that and some others when we come right back. Stick with us. Back. We're talking with Lee Strobel, who is the former legal editor of the Chicago Tribune for 13 years. He's a best-selling author of many great books like The Case for Christ, The Case for Faith, and we're talking right now about the new, supposedly, attacks on Jesus' resurrection. We've talked in other programs about the five minimal facts that are accepted by virtually all scholars across the spectrum. You take those five facts, you have to draw a conclusion, you say, what's the best explanation for those five facts? We're saying Jesus actually rose from the dead. That's what the evidence shows. The new scholars, modern scholarship, some of the ones that are popular in the media, bookstores galore, the fact is some of these guys are saying, no, we've got another explanation, and we're looking at those explanations. Let's take another one. A lot of people say it wasn't a physical resurrection of Jesus, but this was a spiritual resurrection. It was kind of something that they experienced, but it wasn't really a literal body that appeared to them.
What do you think? Is just so contrary to the evidence, John. I mean, the fact is that Paul himself in Acts 13 specifically says that Jesus' body did not see decay. In 1 Corinthians 15, where we have the creed of the early church that he was buried and he was resurrected. N.T. Wright, in his voluminous book about the resurrection, documents convincingly that the resurrection to that Jewish audience meant a physical resurrection from the dead. Now, what some people say is, well, what about where Paul says you sow a natural body and then you get a...
It's raised
as a spiritual body. They say, well, there you go. It's starting as a material body and then it's spiritual. Well, I talked to a scholar who actually researched the way that word in the Greek for natural body, natural, he researched every single way it was used in any published literature from 800 B.C. through 300 A.D., and never once is it used as the idea of being physical. Natural does not mean physical. What it means is, as we have natural bodies, we have a natural appetite for worldly and fleshly and sinful things, and yet we are then born again, we end up with a new body that has spiritual appetites, that is imbued by and follows the Spirit of God. That's what it's getting at there. Some people say, well, Paul's vision was unlike the other disciples, and it was much more subjective. Yeah, but you got to remember, this was after Jesus had ascended into heaven. And so it's understandable that his experience would be different. Plus, it was, as we said earlier, an objective experience that others noticed the phenomenon, even though they didn't understand the voice. They noticed that something had happened. Now, if a historian's going to accept the fact that he did have this encounter on the road to Damascus, they've got to accept the whole package.
What did Paul mean when he said in Galatians 1:16 that God was pleased to reveal his son in me?
Yeah, some people say that revealing in me means this was just a subjective experience. However, you can also translate that reveal to me. So I think that might be perhaps another way to look at it. If perhaps equal weight can be given for the idea that it's translated to me, then that's solved. On the other hand, even if you translate it in me, that cannot negate Paul's own words. You cannot then negate what else he says, where at least three different times he indicates this was a physical resurrection. His body did not see decay. How much more do we need to say that he believed this was a physical resurrection?
Yeah, 1 Corinthians 15, again, that which was buried, whatever you want to call it, that was the physical body. That's the thing that was raised.
Right.
All right?
Exactly.
All right. Another objection is that this was an hallucination.
Yeah.
All right,
This was the way I tried to get around it, John. When I was an atheist and I'm investigating, I said, wait a minute, these were hallucinations. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to check it out. So I went to a guy, I figured I'll find a qualified individual. I found someone who is a PhD in psychology, who's a professor for over 20 years at a major university in psychology, author of 40 books on psychology, and president of a National Association of Psychologists and Counselors. I figured he's pretty qualified. So I said, could this have been hallucinations? Thinking, hey, I solved it. And he said, no, it can't. I said, why not? He said, Lee, hallucinations are individual events. They cannot be shared. It's not like I can say to you, how'd you like the dream I had last night? You know, you cannot share it. Or as one person said to me, they said, it's not like you can be asleep at night and you wake up your spouse and say, honey, I'm having a dream about a vacation in Maui. Why don't we both go back to sleep? We'll dream it together. We'll save all this money. Well, you can't do that. Hallucinations cannot be shared. They're individual. And then he said something to me, John, I'll never forget. He said, Lee, 500 people experiencing the same hallucination at the same time would be a bigger miracle than the resurrection itself. Mm-hmm. So the idea that it's a hallucination, and I'm shocked that anybody even believes this anymore. And yet, recently in the atheistic literature, this is being floated again as some explanation for what happened. Some people say, well, it was wishful thinking. They hallucinated because they missed Jesus so much. Oh, we want him to be back. Well, that doesn't explain the Apostle Paul, who was a persecutor of the church as Saul of Tarsus. He didn't want Jesus to be back. Doesn't explain James, a half-brother Jesus, who didn't follow Jesus during his lifetime. So right there you have, and plus the fact it doesn't deal with the empty tomb.
What about delusions? People say they were just deluded.
Yeah. Delusion, hallucination is something that you imagine is there that isn't. A delusion is when you persist in believing something even though you have good evidence that it's not true. And of course, the famous example is the people who committed suicide because they believed a spaceship was coming. It was hiding behind the comet Hale-Bopp and was going to come get them. Well, they had been told by scientists that is not a spaceship you see hiding behind the comet. That is the planet Mars. But they persisted in their bizarre beliefs and were willing to die for it because they were deluded. That's not the case with the disciples. They had positive, affirmative evidence that Jesus did return from the dead. They touched him, they talked with him, they ate with him, they experienced him in a way that it couldn't be a mistake, it couldn't be a hallucination, it wasn't wishful thinking, and knowing that truth that they had encountered him, they were willing to die for that truth.
Got 30 seconds left. Give me the five facts and the conclusion that you came to. We're going to pick this up again next
sure.
week.
Five facts that virtually every scholar will agree to. The execution of Jesus, the disciples believing that they encountered the resurrected Jesus, the conversion of Saul of Tarsus, the persecutor of Christians, into being Paul the apostle, the great missionary of the church, the conversion of James, the half-brother of Jesus, who didn't follow Jesus during his lifetime, who encountered the resurrected Jesus, became the leader of the Jerusalem church and died for it, and the empty tomb, which 75% of critical scholars will admit is true.
And what drove you then?
Well, for me, the conclusion's obvious, that what explanation best fits the facts. If you don't rule out the supernatural at the outset, as a lot of historians do, they say, can't happen, so I'm ruling it out. If you let the evidence take you wherever it will take you, even to a very uncomfortable conclusion, as I did, I came to the conclusion, the best explanation, Jesus returned from the dead and thus proved he's the Son of God.
Yeah, folks, if you listen, these explanations supposedly that refute the resurrection are just nutty. I mean, they just don't make sense in light of the facts. But we're not done looking at some of the things that are very popular in the press today that are in the bookstores right now. You'll probably see media shows on them coming up. Stick with us. Next week, we're going to continue these supposed objections to the historical facts concerning the resurrection. Stick with us. We'll see you then.
For additional resources, log on to jashow.org. That's jashow.org.